You're listening to the Carnival Cast. Reviews of scary movies, interviews with cool people, and my mommy and daddy.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
I'm Rainy Bitter, and I play Michelle.
Thank you. And Lala.
I'm Lala Hensley, and I play Sarah.
Matthew.
My name is Matthew Mercer, and I play Malcolm.
James.
My name is James Adam Lim, and I play Wes.
And Jennifer.
My name is Jennifer Chang, and I am writer-producer, and I play Serena.
And Perry.
Perry too, cinema slut.
Take 17.
Director.
Jennifer, you wrote the screenplay, the script, Dead Inside. Yes?
Yes.
And this was a film that you wrote to appease Perry's desire to make a movie using only a teenage cast, correct?
Yeah, that was his specific request. Only teenagers, all teenagers all the time. That's what Perry Teo is about now.
Wow.
So
very nice, guys, very nice.
Let us go around quickly and we'll touch on the casting process here. We'll let Jennifer put her two cents in on each one of these performers and what they brought to the table and why ultimately they were chosen for these specific roles. So let's go ahead and have Jennifer, why don't you start with Lala?
Okay. Lala was pretty much the only choice for this at the end of the day. She came into the audition room with, like, she was fresh-faced and, you know, friendly and sweet, and then the instant the camera came on, she slated. She was vulnerable and, like, heart-wrenchingly beautiful in her delivery, and especially the monologue. I don't think she left a dry eye in the room, but we made her go through the callback process anyway, just in case. And she did it again. She brought it full force, and there was really no other choice. I mean, she blew the competition out of the water. She's just gorgeous and powerful, and she was the whole package. We were very, very lucky to get her.
And Perry, you can confirm this nonsense?
Yeah, all the nonsense is true. I think Lala really, delivered during her auditions. And I think for me, the callbacks was less of, you know, seeing whether she can deliver again and more of, you know, what her chemistry is, you know, with the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Because what, you know, at the bottom line is, despite all the conflicts within Dead Inside, the script, I think it's an ensemble piece, you know. I think every character has a equal right and importance in the story. And So for me, it was also about finding out, you know, whether there's a chemistry or lack of chemistry between her and the rest of the people I choose.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jennifer, let's move on to James then.
James. James is going to be huge. I could say that. I'm going to call it right now. little known fact about James, I'm going to embarrass you. He was training to be a nurse, and I think the world is going to be grateful that he ditched that endeavor, because James is a gorgeous Asian American man. No, come on, I'm going to do this to everybody. And his the thing about the character that he portrays, Wes, he needs to, like, seethe and just, like, emit, like, manly prowess, like, all the time. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't, and me and Perry knew James from before, and that's not something that James is naturally. He's a sweet, sweet guy. But when he came into the audition, I think everybody was frightened. Frightened. He brought so much intimidation, and he was, you know, just oozing confidence and just knocked it out of the park. There was, he, like Lala, there was, you know, there was no competition.
I have to agree with you. Actually, it was funny, and And I'm sorry to actually bring this up in public, James, but, you know, because he was my friend, it was kind of like, yeah, I'll let you audition and all that, but I honestly, I didn't see him in a role. It was like, you know, I honestly didn't, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, just come and here's your lines, read it. And he delivered the line, and I was like,
damn.
Fuck, I guess I don't know everything, do I? And it blew me away. It was a home run. And, you know, since then I was actually, you know, it's nice when your friends actually surprise you, because, you know, for the most part, most of my life, you know, I've always treated my friends kind of like, you know, yeah, come in, good luck, I probably won't cast you, you know. And it's probably harder being my friend as well, because I see it from a very subjective eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of don't want to be that person that casts my friends in my movies just because they're my friends. So in some weird way, James almost had it harder than everybody else. So, you know, good job that he actually hit a home run on that.
Yeah, that makes total sense, because, you know, you can kind of get yourself trapped into a situation where it just looks like you're casting people for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
So let's move on to Rainey here.
Rainey. All right. we had a casting emergency with our Michelle
mm-hmm.
character. First round auditions, we didn't have anyone come in that we could see in the role at all. So during the callbacks, we had like an emergency Michelle casting session. We called in like hordes of potential Michelles. And we matched them all with Matt Mercer.
Mm.
So it was kind of a, it was, I'm sure it was exhausting for him to be matched with blonde after blonde for like 6 hours.
I'm sure that was horrible.
It, more than you think, believe it or not.
But Rainey, God damn, like you, Rainey was so gorgeous, and I mean, she came in fresh, like she came in without any makeup on, I believe, and she was still beautiful,
mm-hmm.
like Jan Brady, pre-football.
Yeah, I was gonna say
pre-football to the face. And it was actually raining that day. So, if anything, it was the universe telling us that, you know, the right girl had come in.
Sure.
Same thing. The scene that we had her audition with, she actually had to cry on cue.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, seriously, waterworks.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly. Beautiful.
You know what, Jen? You weren't so spiritual when there's hauntings in the house, and now you're getting all spiritual.
Yeah, son of a crap. Stupid fucking house.
We'll get to that.
But Rainey is gorgeous, and an amazing actress.
Oh, love.
And last but certainly not least is Matthew.
Yes, Matt Mercer. He brings a lot more to the. Stop laughing. He brings a lot more to the role than, you know, just powerful performance, and, you know, endless blue eyes and flowing golden blonde hair.
Blonde hair?
Sexy. Or dirty blonde. Are you not dirty blonde? Kind of dirty
blonde? I'm
straight
up brunette. You're getting your address
really?
Confused. I was
really?
In a movie, Jen.
And sexy musculature, chiseled feature. I mean, he brings more than all that. He also brings...
yeah, all this to this point is sounding very superficial to me.
No, he also...
That's pretty much me. You got it in a nutshell.
It's not at all the vision I had for my film.
Well, I'm not talking.
He's also an amazing with a dedicated fan base.
Well, no, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, Perry set this all up and wanted to do this, and this is not at all what I expected. I expected maybe we should start talking about the film instead of how beautiful all these people are.
No, I can't keep playing with these people.
I was ugly through the whole thing, if that helps. Like,
yeah.
If that helps. At all.
All right.
Sorry to embarrass that.
Let's not do like the IMDb type synopsis, but I want to hear from the you know director and the producer here what this film is about.
Take it away, Perry.
I think Dead Inside to me is, you know, a story about teens confronting each other in their darkest possible reflections of themselves. I think that it, you know, when definitely I know when I make it, it's about, you know, a central character whose name is Sarah, and she goes through one night of meeting new people and the discomfort that she feels, and having a total, how do I say, revelation, if you can say, of what human nature is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And while the IMDb is actually, you know, story specific and it's, you know, done very well, I think it's a little deeper than that. I think, you know, every one of my characters, they each have their own strengths and weaknesses, and I tried to exploit them as best as I could. And I think they really portray, you know, the inner darkness of the human spirit very well.
I know that when we've talked before, you obviously approved of and enjoyed and really felt that the script and the writing was strong enough, was very strong, I should say, when it came to you. You knew that there was a story in there that you wanted to tell.
Right.
And I also know that you had shared with me some of your excitement and concerns and also difficulties with securing a location. A location that I think, from the sounds of things, becomes an integral part and essentially a character in the film.
Right.
But you were able to decide and ultimately find the type of location that you wanted to bring this script to life. And from the sounds of things, it was pretty intense.
Yeah, you know, I definitely didn't want a, you know, I mean, the whole place, the whole time this whole movie takes place in one house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it is very easy to find a house that kind of lends to the feel that it's a quote-unquote haunted house kind of thing. And I didn't want that. So I was very, very careful about, you know, choosing the house of Jennifer and where, you know, what kind of feel we want to have of it. And at the same time, I didn't want it to be just a, you know, a regular two-story, you know, American modern house kind of thing. As you know, Chris, I tend to choose my visuals and try to make it as timeless as possible.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense that if somebody watches it, you know, 10 years, 20 years from now, I don't want them to think that, oh, this was a 2011 film, but rather as, you know, just look at it as a film just on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So in choosing the house, I paid very much, you know, attention to those aspects. And, you know, finally after Jen, I would say how many you went to? Maybe 20?
Oh, God, 30 to 40.
Yeah.
Easily.
You know, we finally found the right house, and I was like, okay, this is it. And then, you know, becomes the process of how do we make it more ethereal, more out of this world. And I don't want to say out of this world like Necromancer, because Necromancer is a different vehicle on its own.
Right.
But, you know, I definitely tend to look at a house in a different way than most people will.
Do you want to, like, really quick so that, I mean, I'm sure these guys know, but maybe can you touch on two things? Can you touch on what it is about this location that really set it apart from those 30 or 40 others? And then also, can you maybe talk about Chad and how he helps, how he's going to help dress those areas in the house?
It's really about history, and I think the house lends itself to a lot of history. You know, Jen can tell you more about the history. It used to be an orphanage and then a home for mentally disturbed kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very old house that we really liked. And, you know, when coming in with me and Chad, they have already modeled the house really nice, you know, with a very homely peach color.
Mm-hmm.
Was it peach color, Jen? That was the original color?
Kind of a faded terracotta.
Mm. Yeah. So of course, you know, Chad came in and said, all right, what do you want to do with this house?
And so we're talking, of course, about Chad Michael Ward.
Yes.
Incredible photographer and also, what would you say, jack of many to all trades?
I really say he is a master of a visual eye. You know, he has a very good visual eye, and he when he came in the house, I think what was really nice, I mean, you know, this is why we're both business partners, is that when both of us walked into a house, we immediately say dark green, and we knew exactly what color we wanted. We knew what furniture, what props, you know, we wanted and all that. And it was so much as, you know, yeah, just go out, get me this look, you know what to do. And he's, you know, just gives me the thumbs up. And, you know, it's amazing the kind of stuff that we find, that he found, you know, from prop houses, scouring rentals, even going to, like, you know, swap meets and finding stuff and all that kind of things. So it was like trying to establish a certain look that's timeless and all.
Well, let's,
what's that? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I chime in here. For the record, I do want to say that, we, after the exhaustive search, we didn't choose the house. The house really chose us. And I mean that in the craziest batshit way possible. Like, I was at the location and I called Perry because it seemed perfect. Mm-hmm. And I called Perry and the first thing Perry said when he picked up the phone was, "You're standing in the house." And I was like, "How did you know?" And he said he had had a dream that I'd found the house. And I'm the biggest chicken shit in the whole world. Like, anyone that knows me will tell you that. Like, I don't even like horror films, honestly. But, So it wasn't until much later after we booked the house that we found out about its history, about it being an orphanage for mentally disturbed children and hauntings that happened in there. And it was, it was really supernatural.
Well, here's what we're going to do. I want to get into this. I want to cover this. And I know that, that Perry is very interested in doing this as well. And, I want to throw a log on the fire here, and the six of you are going to sit around the campfire, and you're going to tell your dead inside location stories. So let's all just pretend that we're sitting around that fire and talk to one another, jump in, jump out, interrupt, do what you got to do, and tell everyone.
All right. Before that happens, James has got to be the last one because he got the most shit from the house. All right.
Fair enough. So, always directing.
You have to be the last one. Yeah.
It's... Okay. Well, go ahead. Let's hop in and sell me this because sell me the skeptic. I'm the skeptic.
Okay. Wait. Who goes first?
Lala, go first. You'll lead.
Okay. Well, I fell down on everything, first of all, in that house. And I brought my dog there one day when we were off and we weren't shooting. We were just hanging out and watching movies and Perry cooked dinner for us. And I started walking down into the basement. My dog looked into the basement. She tucks her ears back when she gets scared. And she started, like, slowly backing away. So I started walking down, and I was like, come here. She would not go down there. I kind of, like, tried to get her, like, physically get her to come in. She wouldn't go. And when I first walked into, there were several times when I would walk into the wardrobe room, which is, like, the furthest back room, and there would be no one else in the house because it was still when we were in pre-production. And the lights would just have either they were off and they would turn on or they were off. Turn off, and I walked into the wardrobe room once, and I saw like the clothes just swaying, and there's no wind moving into that room at all. It's a really hot room, and there's no any sort of ventilation. There's no air conditioner in there. There's the windows are like sealed shut, nothing. And there was one night where I seriously think I took this thing home with me because I went home. We had done 6 p.m. 6 a.m. shoot. No, I know you don't believe me. Scary. It was a 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. shoot the first 2 weeks. And I got home and I took a shower and I was like, oh my gosh, it feels so good to be home, you know. And you know, there's like plastic bags that are thin and then there's like really thick ones. And I had one in my room that had dirty clothes in it or something. And I get into bed and I'm all comfy and all of a sudden I hear something going through this bag. And Chris, you are laughing at me, but I am telling you, I heard something going. It was very methodical. It was very, like, I was freaked out, so I was, you know.
I think what I'm laughing about is the fact that there are two types of plastic bags, thin ones and thick ones.
There's like, you guys suck. There's really thick ones that, like, they don't blow away easily, or I don't know, whatever. It was stuck to my because it was trapped by my bag, and it sounded like something was going through it, and it was a good 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finally picked up my balls to look up, I, like, quickly looked up, and it stopped.
Mm.
And this weird sound started traveling my stairs into my living room, and then it just stopped. And I've never been so scared. I was so freaking scared. Because, you know, you get home, you think, oh, I'm really safe. But this was methodical. There was no wind going through my room at all. The door was closed to the outside. Like, there was no wind at all. And something was, like, methodically going through this bag.
So you're honestly believing that you brought something back with you from location?
I think that we had a little sleepover that night. Mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely do. And it was so methodical. Like, it just didn't sound like rustling. It sounded like it was looking for something.
Now, are there experiences that were shared by more than one of you at the same time?
Yes.
Okay, but James, you've got to go last.
Okay.
That's what I was told anyway by Perry. So outside of James discussing an experience that involved multiple cast members, multiple individuals, what else is going on here? I mean, is this just it gets into your head and you kind of magnify it and kind of make it happen for yourself, or is this place really inside you during the production of this film?
Is it dead inside you? It could be a combination of the two. Like, me personally, I have a fascination with the paranormal, but from a very skeptic point of view. I'm always, like, waiting to disprove in hopes that maybe one day I will be proven that I can't disprove it.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for retroactive? But anyway, so I went into this house already like, this is nothing. It's kind of cool, spooky, but whatever. Progressively, within the first 3 days of shooting, just certain rooms give you weird feelings. Like, I never quite understood the whole, you know, change in temperature or just looking into a dark room and getting that sense of ominous, you know, fear. And there are a few places in this household that struck me immediately, and I didn't quite know what to make of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Perry had a couple things going on. There's one I'm sure he'll talk about with his iPad at some point that was kind of fantastic.
Jen Will,
there you go. But yeah, there was just little things here and that over time began to progressively get stronger and stronger. And then people that would show up on set to help out or were friends that were more sensitive,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, would begin telling stories about various spirits they encountered. But individually, all these stories were consistent from person to person who were not communicating with each other. So that also added an element of strange coincidence. Yep. And so, like, you know, while I didn't have any really crazy experiences like other people did, personally, I definitely had an atmospheric change of heart about being so skeptical at
mm-hmm.
this production.
Mm-hmm. Jen, were you?
I was trying. Oh, my goodness. There was a moment where me and Matt were trying to, like, see something paranormal, and we sat in a closet during the trailer shoot for about half an hour.
Yeah, you were sitting in the closet looking for something paranormal, I'm sure.
I know, right?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
What's the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Matthew?
Oh, brown hair, apparently.
And did anything come of that, Rainey?
No, nothing really came of that particular thing. I just felt
to every guy. You can't really...
Yeah, I've been in closets with many men throughout this year, the making of this film. I'm joking.
So the part Rainey really played in this movie.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I know, I just feel like the house never wanted us to leave, and that was what was scary about the house.
Mm-hmm.
I would come for, like, one day and end up staying there like 3 or 4 nights, and it was just incredible. It was like cabin fever.
You stayed because you had to, or you stayed because you felt like something was going to happen if you left?
Well, it was a mixture of both. I mean, you know, there was one day where I was in prosthetics and then, you know, this gas leak thing happened and then I ended up staying the night anyway because I had to be there in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, it was crazy. It was creepy.
Let's hear from James.
All right. This ghost really like messing with me, or this entity or whatever. The first week, I believe, there's a one of Perry's friends, she came over, and she apparently sees a lot of things as well, and I don't know if you guys know night terrors and stuff like that, but apparently, you know, some people get paralyzed and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was actually wide awake. I was, like, lying down on the couch.
I actually think I'm suffering from a night terror right now.
Yay. Yeah, so I was on the couch. And I was, you know, I just had my eyes closed, just, you know, relaxing a little bit. And Perry's friend was on the other couch, just on her cell phone. And I all of a sudden, I was paralyzed, and I couldn't move. I was like, oh, man, it's happening, you know, because it tends to happen sometimes for me, like, when mm-hmm. I'm kind of dwindling in my faith, because I'm a, you know, somewhat of a religious guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anyways, yeah, I was paralyzed and stuff, and all of a sudden I see like, an image of this girl, this 14-year-old girl with long brown hair, and, you know, I was like, immediately, you know, I started to pray and stuff, and every time I prayed, it would try to distract me, though. Like, it would get in my face. And, yeah, eventually I prayed and got out of it. And then I just, like, jumped up, and I was like, what the hell? And then the girl was like, okay? And I was like, no, I'm not. So I went into the other room.
Uh-huh.
And Perry's friend, like, runs out of the living room. She's like, oh, my God. I was like, what? And she was like, I just saw the girl, and she was, like, laughing, like, getting a kick out of messing with me or whatever.
Really?
Yes, that was the first event that happened.
Uh-huh. I cannot believe you at all.
I think...
Perry, are the initials of this friend BB?
Right, no.
Is
no,
it?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Continue, James.
Okay, and then there's another... I think it was the third week. I was sleeping in upstairs in the middle bedroom, and I don't know how you guys are laughing, but it happened again. I had another little episode, whatever, where I was, you know, awake. I had just woken up. Now I was just lying there, like, my eyes were open. And I got paralyzed again.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a nightstand, like, right next to the bed, and I hear, like, a finger that's going over the wood. You know that sound that it makes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you run your fingers, you know, through the wood.
Yeah, the scraping.
Right, the scraping, yeah. I heard that for, like, I don't know, 5 minutes, and I just, like, could not get out of it.
Hmm.
That sucks. The guy with the Ouija board tattoo is supposed to be the one that says the shit.
Yeah, you wouldn't let us play with your belly.
No, of course not. That's for me, not for you.
I know, but we wanted to.
Well, what was the timeline? Like, at what point of the production was this happening to you, James?
This was pretty much every week.
Okay.
It just had, like, the very last week, I think it was with one of our other producers on the first AD, Chris Fischel. We were, you know, trying to go to sleep. It was in the living room, and then we just, all of a sudden, it was like, we just hear knocking in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, slamming of doors and stuff. Because, mm-hmm. like, downstairs, there's, like, these latches that open into the, like, below the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, but all those, I mean, those doors were locked, you know, because... Yeah, we checked them already. They were locked. And then we came back upstairs, and then they just kept banging. Like, and then we walked downstairs, and, like, all the doors were open.
So do you feel like so let's say you're saying if this happened every week, like, we can reasonably say your first week on location you had an experience like this?
Mm-hmm.
How did this play into the way you were able to work and inhabit your character and move on? Was some of this fear or confusion as to what was going on, was that with you during your performance?
I believe so. It wasn't much of a fear. It was more of just, like, knowing that, like, there was darkness in the house, like, mm-hmm. something dark and evil, you know?
Mm.
And so that helped me to channel, I guess, darkness into my character. Mm-hmm. Because we go to some scary places, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
I think that it helped, definitely.
Hmm.
To get to that, you know.
And these, possibly, like, you're thinking, are remnants of the fact that this used to be an orphanage? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
It's always a little girl that everybody sees. That's the funny part.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's the same girl. Same description
all the
time.
That's the problem, Chris, is that, like, all these stories that people, all these visions that people are having and stories they're having, it kind of climaxed it. Like, the last week of shooting, the owner of the house, his son came, and started telling stories, and it just corroborated everybody's stories. Like, mm-hmm. he pointed out specifically, there's an old lady that everybody sees. There's a 14-year-old or, like, teenage girl that everyone sees who's very, like, you know, Loki-like in her laughter at people and playing pranks. And it was chilling just hearing it all come together. So.
Well, I mean, I'm the typical... you know, kind of look at everything cross-eyed when it comes to the paranormal. Not that I want to believe or I don't want to believe. I had an experience when I was a child. I woke up one night and I was 7 at the time, and I don't remember being out of bed, but I remember my mom coming into my room and pulling me away from the window. And the next day she asked me what I was doing at the window, and I said I was saying goodbye to Grandma. And she said, well, what do you mean, Grandma's at home? And I said, no, Grandma was outside my window saying goodbye. And shortly thereafter, my grandfather called the house and said that he found my grandmother dead upstairs in bed. And once the body was removed, they had said that she'd been dead for at least 12 hours. So that's the only experience I've ever had with something like that. Although I don't remember anything but my mom pulling me away from the window. I don't remember what I was doing at the window. I remember telling my mom what I was doing at the window. And I distinctly remember my grandfather calling my parents to let them know that he found Grandma dead in bed. So that's my little paranormal story. I feel like, though, I know that you guys just wrapped, and I know that we're heading into the post-production and the editorial process, but I feel like I want to be able to give the audience as much as we can in terms of what this narrative is. I know, Perry, you've made comparisons, but said that things along the lines of like The Ring and The Grudge and films like that are influencing you, visually.
The Orphanage.
Okay. Yeah. It was never The Grudge or The Ring at any
point? I mean, I love the movies, and I think I was kind of referring more to, you know, Asian horror.
Okay.
My approach to the anticipation, the build-up, and the scares were very Asian horror influenced.
Okay.
I can say that. It's not The Ring. Mm-hmm. It's not The Grudge. It's more Ringu.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the Grudge Japanese name is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I've watched those movies, and there's something about the fact that it doesn't try to bring too much attention, you know, to the ghosts and focus more on the human plight that I was very interested in.
Yeah, and those films, too, for me anyway, you can agree or disagree, we'll see, have that kind of overlaying constant feeling of dread about them.
Absolutely.
That you never know even if something's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but there's just a sinister vibe through the whole narrative.
Right. And I think our DP Polly Morgan really help the actors do it, because, you know, there's a very atmospheric lighting to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and very much so.
And, yeah. And, you know, each room, like, you know, Matt's room had a very warm feel. James' room had a very turquoise feel. Or should I say Matt and Rainey's room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jen's death scene had a very warm feel to it. And but the rest of the house has a very edgy, cold feel about it, too. So, you know, I really think it's kind of like a collaboration. You know, I think each of the actors really felt the mood of, you know, each location that we're at, how it was lit and things like that.
Well, you and Jennifer can do this, and then I want to let the individual performers talk too. But let's talk about how these 7 people get in this house, how they're involved with one another, and go as deeply and in as much detail as you can as far as you want to, just so we can inform people in as much detail as possible. Can you
go
do that?
Jen.
Okay.
Okay. Well, the premise is basically that we start with this mentally disturbed girl, and the circumstances around her mental state are shrouded in mystery. But the main thing that we know about her is that her house has to be rigged up a certain way so that it locks from the inside, which is the perfect setup for a impromptu party where a bunch of teens come to her house and mysteriously everything locks. And meanwhile, she has a premonition of all their deaths. They're at that point starting to mistreat her, so you feel like it's somehow related. And in telling them in a moment of passion and rage how they're each going to die, the rest of the movie really kind of unfolds in like it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like in each of their efforts to prevent their own deaths or to understand the situation, their fatal flaws come into play, and things don't go well for them. it's a horror as much as it is a classic tragedy, if that doesn't sound too pretentious. It does sound pretentious. I don't care.
I do. I mean, what is it? It's a study of human nature. It's a study of what people, when pushed into a corner, can do to each other for their own survival.
Okay. Would you consider the film as having definitive protagonists and antagonists, or are we all working in a gray area here?
Well, Jen would probably say it's a gray area. For me, it's almost like I try to pay equal attention to each character and try to make each character have a reasoning for their actions.
Mm-hmm. People are people, and they're going to do what they're going to do.
Correct. And okay. So, you know, is anybody a protagonist, an antagonist, a victim, or, you know, or whatever you want to call it? You know, I try to set the film up in a way that I let the audience decide. Each character have their own, you know, characteristics and all that, and I feel that the audience probably attach themselves to one character at least in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I establish that trust, I kind of, you know, want to let the audience, you know, kind of take on their journey. And each one of the guys have their own journey. Some may be shorter than the others, some may be longer. But, you know, everything centralizes around a Lala, mentally disturbed girl.
Well, and one of the things I wrote a little piece about it, and I'm not sure, you know, how many people have had the honor and privilege of seeing the 22 images from Dead Inside. You know, a lot of people are, because Perry's name is attached to this, like you said, Perry, are gonna harken back to images of, you know, necromancia. Maybe the Gene Generation, because that really was, you know, had some visual flair to it. But I'm not just even talking about the context of the pictures or the visual aesthetic of them. It's kind of a combination of the two. Really relay a very dark and like atmosphere and vibe, the photos that I saw. And is it fair to say that you all went in and made the movie you wanted to make and weren't worried about, you know, any type of rating, any type of predisposed ideas in terms of what this type of film could be categorized as? You just went in and made the film that you wanted to make?
Well, it's very interesting. I actually, for once, try to allow the film to kind of evolve on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Try to let the film grow on its own life. What I did was I worked with each character and try to, you know, have them actually come up with their own backstory and what kind of character that I really like. And then from there, you know, I kind of let everything, you know, the life and the chemistry within each character play on its own. I kind of felt that it went better that way. And actually what came out, I felt, was, you know, a really dark, and sinister chemistry between everybody. And whether or not everybody realized it or not, I feel that it absolutely played in the film.
Hmm. Do you feel like because this is on the surface to the mainstream eye, maybe viewed as or interpreted as teen horror, that this has a legitimate shot or will be approached as the potential to be purchased and distributed theatrically?
I actually believe that it could. Mm-hmm. But it's really tough when you're talking about, you know, teen horror film, because the teen horror film genre has been associated with such bad acting and such stereotyping and mm-hmm. very shallow motivations and all that. And I felt like all my characters in this film actually did the opposite. Mm-hmm. So I'm really conflicted about, you know, how am I going to say this, because everybody did such an amazing job and each character has their own three-dimensional feel to it that, you know, maybe people will actually say it's not a teen horror, even though these people portray teenagers. Maybe because it's their, almost mature take on their art.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say their character, they definitely acted like teenagers for sure, but it's just, you know, the actual delivery of their art was very, very mature, and something that I personally don't feel that is very common within the teenage horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I'm stereotyping, so.
Well, chime in, guys. Interrupt. Rainey, Lala, Matt, James, Jennifer. Let's get in here and talk about this. I mean, when you came into this project and now that you've gone through this whole process, working with you know, Jennifer as a producer and Perry as a director, we're, you know, it's out of your hands now. Your performances have been captured. The performances of yeah, right. Where do you go from here? Do you just, you know, move on to new auditions or in, you know, projects, or you feel, you know, some sort of attachment here? Was this a little bit different than things that you've done before?
It was. I mean, for any actor, when you do finish a large scale project, the necessity is to move on to the next one and just take all that inertia from that completed project and keep pushing forward to get more work and putting yourself out there. Dead Inside definitely sunk itself into myself, and I'm sure other actors will agree, to the point where even it's only been a week since we've wrapped, but it feels like I haven't quite come down to reality yet. And I myself really excited to see, and can't wait for this film to get completed, because we've all put so much effort and energy and love into it. And of all the projects I've been on, this is one of the most fulfilling creatively, and I'm really excited to have been a part of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Come on, somebody else has got to have something. Well,
what's my lead actress, man? She's quiet.
Yeah.
No.
I just make sounds. I don't know. This kind of like with what Matt said, this was a really fulfilling experience. I mean, I got really lucky too, because Sarah is definitely an actress's dream role. There's so much compacted into her, and just listening to you guys, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I really don't think that this is a horror movie. I don't think that at all. I think it's a very intense, I think calling it a teen horror movie in any regard is totally underselling it. Like, it's an emotional thriller. I don't think a lot of people are going to be able to guess the full outcome of all of these characters, and it was like everyone had chemistry, whether it was really good or really bad. I mean, It was such an amazing experience, and it really just gave us Perry's such an amazing director, because he gives us so much room to play. He gives us so much room to do what we want, and then he knows how to curve it into the right path.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, not to interrupt you, I don't want you to think like I'm trying to sell it as a teen horror.
No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
What I'm just saying is, on the surface, that's how it's going to be reacted to.
Of course. But I think that that's great, though, because I think people will go in seeing it, and they're going to be like, oh, great, another one of these teen horror flicks, and then they're going to just not understand what they're seeing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love those movies when I go in, and I'm like, this is going to be a piece of crap, and then... You know, I mean, I don't know. I hope it's going to be great. I know with the performances that I felt from other people and, you know, just, I don't know, leaving the set every day. Like, I hope it's really good. I feel like it will be. And I just, I hope people go into the theater just because they're like, or wherever they'll see it and say, oh, like, maybe this will be crap. And I hope that they're really, really pleasantly surprised because I know they will be.
Well,
it was
it
was an amazing experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure you already know this, but I can say in no uncertain terms that, you know, I wish I could say this about Jennifer too, but Jennifer, unfortunately, I don't know you as well as I know Perry. But I can speak for Perry in terms of he really doesn't let go of anything until it's ripped out of his cold, dead hands.
And my colon.
Ew.
Perry.
Is that the bacon speaking?
Yes.
But, you know, it's an incredible commitment that he has in terms of seeing these projects through with the exact same amount of passion and detail that he started with right from beginning to end. So I can only imagine that whatever you all put into it, Perry is going to handle that with a ton of genuine care and approach it with the utmost intensity to deliver a product that's going to be the best that it possibly can be. Now, how that turns out, I don't know, but I don't think that it's going to be delivered in any other way but its highest quality form.
No, Perry has taken great care of us the whole way through, so there's no doubt that in post-production he'll do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And by great care, she doesn't mean, like, you know, press service food or something.
Right.
No, definitely not.
There we go again.
Well, that would have just...
Ramen.
Ramen noodles.
Mac and cheese.
That was good mac and cheese, though.
It was.
It was damn good mac and cheese. I'm still... Oh.
So
from it. Mm.
The timeline here, we're in post-production. Are you actually pushing for the end of 2011?
October. October is what we're racing towards. It's like the bottom of the cliff.
Okay, October for what? To have DVDs pressed or to be
to deliver a master to sell it, hopefully.
Okay.
At AFM in November. Is that saying too much? That's our goal. That's our goal.
Okay. So you would have. Now, would this be a in terms of a master? Are you speaking to something that the audio, the sound design, everything mm-hmm. visually would be the way that you would expect it to be delivered?
Yep.
Okay. So. You're hoping for that, and ideally, you want to see this to the theaters and kind of, if you will, break down the stereotypes and kind of break the mold, like Lala was talking about, in terms of people going in, anticipating maybe a teen horror and being pulled into a really disturbing, dark drama.
Yeah.
As everyone just laughs.
I know. well, you know, it. Of course, it's everybody's hope that it goes theatrical and all that. But, you know, again, when I approach any of my films and all that, I really don't want to think about that right now. Mm-hmm. I just want to think about, you know, what's the best for the film and all that. Because when you start thinking politics and all that, I think, you know, the division of the film and the quality of the film as translated from the those colored glasses kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't say whether I'm making a PG film or an R-rated film, you know, we're just going to make a fucking good film, and mm-hmm. then we'll let everybody decide from then on what happens after that.
You can tell me none of my business.
And everybody's quiet.
you can tell me none of my business at this point, but is there blood in this film?
Yeah, there is a little, but I think for me in this film, what's different from Necromancer is that not only am I taking a more linear approach to this, but I'm very excited about the fact that, well, because this is in a very weird way, it's a ghost story,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not so much interested in the gore
mm-hmm.
and the violence in this film so much as I'm interested in what builds up to it.
Are there jump scares in this film?
Maybe, but you know, I won't let it out yet. But I'll tell you right now that I'm not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can put it simply,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm more interested in, you know, how it leads up to that, the anticipation, the build up, and everything that goes up to there. And I think that's where it's actually most exciting, because you know, if I wanted gore, if I wanted violence, I'll make a slasher film. I wouldn't make this film.
Mm-hmm. Are there things possibly hiding in the shadows in this film?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Well, for me personally, I, actor aside, as a fan of the horror genre as long as I have been, and it's an excessive use of jump scare as a primary technique to get an audience, you know, mm-hmm. freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just, for me, lost my interest on many, many projects. This project has been really fantastic for me to watch is the heavy focus on atmosphere and lighting mm-hmm. and shadows
yeah.
and, mm-hmm. and much like the classic films like Ridley Scott's Alien, what made it so great was not what you saw, but what it let mm-hmm. you think of and what you didn't see, what your imagination was conjuring
right.
based on the rest of the frame the film had built for you. And this movie very much ties into that element of atmospheric production. I'm so excited to see the final product for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also that you don't know what these things that you can't even see, you don't even know what they can do to you, but you know that they can do something. And
mm-hmm.
you know
mm-hmm.
that they can hurt you. You just don't know how and on what level.
Does the sound design add to the terror of the film?
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you a little bit about sound. I'm bringing Lisa Fahl back from Gene Generation into this project.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know you were going to mm-hmm. do that. Wow.
So she and I, when you know, we have been over our times as you know, God brother and God sister, have been collecting a lot of you can say white noise.
Mm-hmm.
And we love visiting this haunted location and recording these white noises and all that. And we've developed quite an interesting library from it. And I can honestly tell everybody that I intend to fully use every single one of our arsenal over the years in the sound design of this film. And, you know, not only that is that, you know, whenever... You know how you have that cliché demon whispers and all that in other films? In our case, what we're actually going to do is we're going to actually make up our own language for this.
Okay.
We're going to create our own language, mm-hmm. and we're going to incorporate a very foreign language into this. And maybe on our website, we'll actually post interpretations, translations for that, or at least provide the audience with the tools to be able to translate those words in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, while this movie can be watched in a very commercial mainstream sense, there is also a very deeper, you know, subtext that, you know, we could explore further beyond, you know, the realm of the dead and, you know, what's in it to us for the afterlife and how it relates to, you know, one person's mind and character.
Is this a film that whether...
It's not a film, it's a movie.
is this a cinematic experience that whether I'm having this cinematic experience in my home or theatrically, that I may possibly, once I lay down a bed and turn out my lights, may actually think about and consider and reflect upon what I've seen?
Not on the first. I would say the film was designed.
Wait, I thought you said it was a movie.
Okay, the movie. the movie was designed so that you will actually watch it the first time, and it seems to be very straightforward. It seems to be, it seems to have a level that, you know, you can follow. It's a very linear story. And it's a story that, you know, even, you know, 12, 13-year-olds can understand. It's a classic story. That's what it is. However, should you be willing or daring to go a little bit further in and try to decipher, you know, images of reflections and shadows and sound design, not sound design, just sound in general, white noises and all that, I think you'll find deeper meaning into this, just like I try to put in all my films.
Well, and I think you all kind of know what I was getting at when I was doing kind of those monotone delivery of the questions. Is kind of, you start off, you know, with what...
Oh, there
what,
you go.
You start off with maybe thinking about what the mainstream would ask, you know, is there blood? Are there jump scares? Are there things hiding in the shadows? And, you know, I'm kind of, I'm notorious. I'm a person that, I very much refuse to go to the theater, not just because it costs a lot of money and I don't like popcorn and I don't really like listening and seeing people texting and watching their phones ring. But, I find, the most entertaining genre films to not be in the theaters, and the blood and the jump scares and, you know, the cheap scares and whatnot aren't really what appeal to me. I like to sit down and think about what I've seen and then watch it again and try and pick it apart and find more and expand upon that and, you know, really get my noodle working. Not that one, but my brain open up.
What's funny about this movie is that Necromancy, you really need to use your head to actually
get
the film to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But in this film, the way I'm envisioning, you really need to use your heart. Because a lot of times it's, you know, the way I've suggested directions to my actors, and I try not to tell them do this, do that, so much as suggesting things to them and guiding them along the process, is you really have to feel this movie. And should you even give yourself up into this movie, I think what I was really pleased about with my actors this time around was that there is a deeper sense of dread, there's a deeper sense of darkness within all of us that, you know, can be deciphered if you actually use your heart this time around. And, you know, I'm almost wary of talking more about it just because it might give away too much of the movie.
Yeah, I'm getting nervous about that too.
Yeah. But I have to say that, you know, my actors are all very consistent in the research and the breakdowns of what they're doing, and kind of, you know, not only guided but inspired me along the process to, you know, create a film that's not only, commercially pleasing, but I find that for my fans creates a very deeper meaning to it, because for my career it's always been one extreme to another, you know what I mean? It's like being Witchville, which is very commercial, and then you have Necromancer, which is very artistic kind of thing. And I think Dead Inside, while it leans to the commercial, has a lot of hints to the artistic side too. But you know, the artistic side is very vague. It's very It's almost very nondescript and very incognito, unless you really, really understand a lot of my past work, then you'll be able to go, holy shit, I see something a little bit more. But
Would you say it's there if you're willing and able to open yourself up to that side of it? If you make the decision to maybe look a little deeper, it's there. If you want to just enjoy it on a surface level, you can experience it that way too.
It's definitely there on a surface level. I don't think it may be quite that obvious. But yeah, you can definitely throw it a little bit one step further if you want to. And, you know, if people are willing to take it one step further, I can, they will be able to feel something a little bit more than just a movie. But for the most part, I'm not banking on that. I'm banking on this to be just a movie on its own.
Why did a cat just appear?
It's Jen.
I want to go around and you know, you're a week removed from the film and it's headed to post, like we said. If I could go around to everybody and just you know, sum up, you know, how you feel after this talk, how you feel after working on the film, and what your future holds for you, Rainey.
Mm. Yes, well, I was a bit nervous coming into this conversation because I haven't really had the opportunity to speak to any kind of outside person about mm-hmm. this film, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all like, it was such an emotional roller coaster for me.
Personal?
And just, yeah, like a personal, like, you know, on a personal level, just like as an actress, this being my first feature that I've worked on, and just like in general, the character goes through so much that just being a week away from it and actually speaking about it from a distance, it's already difficult,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, this was really enlightening, and I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an amazing movie.
Do you feel like you're not ready to give any of it away yet?
Yeah, I think I'm still kind of gripping onto it. I'm still in that kind of zone, and it's going to take a while for me to step back. And
sure.
You know, but I have so much faith in this movie, and I'm so proud of it, and I'm sure everybody's going to love it. So.
Aw. Well, it was a genuine pleasure, even though, you know, you didn't have a ton of time to talk. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much.
And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing this performance from you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
La la. Mm.
Hannah. No. My first name is Hannah, so Perry makes fun of me. But
La 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 la.
Exactly. We really became a family on this project. I can't say that enough. Like, there's no one person that I don't want to talk to after being done with this. I mean, mm-hmm. we really put all of our love and our hearts into it. And I've started auditioning again, and I've gone on a few auditions, and it's like they go well, but it's still like it's so weird taking direction from another director. Like,
right.
I feel like I'm cheating on Perry and. Mm. And like it was
I'm just your dad.
I know. Well, it's a very no, not like that. But like it's just, I just feel very, I don't know. Like I'm definitely heart sick because I miss it so much. But this is the first time where I've walked out of something and felt like it was the crew and the cast together. Like mm-hmm. everyone worked together so well, and that this is the first experience that I've ever had. Where I've ever seen people work for each other as mm-hmm. much as it wasn't for the outcome, it wasn't for the theatrical release, it was to get that perfect shot, and we did it on several occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I feel like I love Dead Inside, and even if though I haven't even seen it yet, and I'm just, you know, it's going to be really hard to find a project with that much effort and passion going.
There were times that we spent like close to 4 hours just to get one shot right.
Mm. Or there were times when we had like 10 minutes left in the day and the crew would put together a shot in 2 minutes and we would rock it out and finish early.
Nice.
That happened a couple of times too.
Well, it's hard. It's kind of like, you know, you're 10 years old and summertime again, and you went over to your friend's house and his mom made the banging Kool-Aid, and then you came home and you had to drink you had to drink the garbage that your
very
mom makes.
So.
You know,
comparison.
It kinda, this is an amazing experience. Like it's going to be really hard to top this.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How about you, James? What are you taking away from all this? How are you feeling?
I'm doing pretty badly.
Oh, no. Are you paralyzed again?
I'm tonight.
What's going on, James? Are you
snorting?
Who's snorting?
I know who it is.
Oh,
man. Shut up.
Well, James, right. What's going on, James?
James.
I'm like, you know, at home in Texas and stuff, and I don't know what's going to happen when I get back to LA. Like, I don't want to audition or anything. Like, I don't know. I just don't want this process to be over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty tough right now, but
mm-hmm.
we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah. I've nothing to say.
He doesn't even
really.
Want to talk about it. He doesn't even want to talk about it.
Well, I mean, that's... I mean, I can't speak super personally on it, but I mean, that's obviously for many people what happens when you kind of have that perfect storm and then you have to walk away from it.
Yeah.
I like that word, perfect storm.
It is, right?
It's actually two words, Perry, but...
Oh, whatever, I'm drinking, shut up.
But, I mean, you know, James, I can identify with that in a way because, God, after you've kind of, in many ways, reached the peak, the letdown seems a lot lower sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if you know, you're ever going to get there again.
Yeah, sure.
So, but the one very positive thing too is that, like Perry said, you did have a bit of a tougher road being a friend. Mm-hmm. to get that role, and then on top of it, when you make a connection and work for somebody like Perry, it can only serve to better you as a person and an artist. So there's always that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
But I'm very excited to see your performance, also because of the way Jennifer described it as
powerhouse.
Yeah, it's so brooding. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you,
Matthew.
Yes, sir.
What are you summing up here, sir?
The whole process was so intense, not just emotionally, but just from an atmospheric standpoint. Being in that house for so long with the same family of people, you establish these bonds, these connections with these people every day. It becomes your world.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where, especially towards the end of a shoot, the end of a long 4-week run, a part of you is kind of excited to get back to the people you haven't seen in a month and the world that you used to know beforehand. And the moment you're out of it, you're back in that real world, you look back and you realize you immediately miss being back with everybody else during that film.
Sure.
You know, aside from catching up on sleep, it's just been this kind of... I've been greatly missing everyone who's on this podcast and everyone who's been involved with this Aww. Production since it ended. And I'm looking forward to all of us, you know, having this exhale and then being able to reconnect as friends and go and have lunch together and just hang out outside of this. Because I think I've made a fantastic array of friends just through this production.
What's going on over there, James?
Sorry, there wasn't a NBA finals.
I thought you just jumped into oncoming traffic.
Jesus.
So they're, you know, and what Matt says, it seems to like have that kind of consistent tone for everybody. It's just, you know, summer camp's over.
Yeah. but the thing is, at the end of this summer camp, all of us have together as a group made an incredible piece of art and storytelling, and mm-hmm. we're all very excited to see not only the final product, but to see how it affects other people and how they can appreciate it as well. And that mm-hmm. really is going to bring the whole thing together for mm-hmm. myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people here as well. Just to know that other people can appreciate what we work so hard on. And see what connection they pull out of that.
Yeah, and you guys will be so giddy when you get back together for the premiere, so.
ADR, man, ADR.
It'll
be
fun.
It'll just be retarded if you're allowed to say that in this politically correct world. Jennifer, let's hear from you again. What have you taken out of this whole thing?
I'm either incredibly blessed or terribly cursed to still be living dead inside and to be having to for the next few months.
Mm.
Like, this whole week has been more like solo missions, you know, on the production side for...
Sure.
So it's, you know, a little lonely, but gratifying in its own way. What I've taken away from it, you know, it was really challenging in a lot of ways. I got really stretched to a lot of my limits, but I had, like, this incredible... like, you know, support system.
Mm-hmm.
So even through the darkest times, just knowing that there were just like family people to reach out to at any given moment, any hour of the day, or night. And I do have to shout out, I have to do my little shout out to Derek Parham, who's an executive producer.
Ramen!
An executive producer on this project, who basically left his life behind for like 2 months and just joined us on this production. And just
his life or his wife?
His life.
Okay.
His life. Yeah, he left the Bay Area and just threw himself wholeheartedly into Dead Inside, you know, for no pay because he was the one paying.
Right.
and Will Magno, Alejandrino, who was a co-producer on this, who also, you know, gave so much of himself and kind of was there for me to lean on through a lot of this. So, yeah, I mean, everything's been said before by these wonderful, beautiful people here. You know, we became a family and we love each other in so many ways, and that's what I've taken from it. It was the worst of times and like the best of times for all of us, and we survived.
Nice.
And we made a movie.
Perry.
Well, I think I can poke a little fun at everybody in this podcast and say, well, you guys are all like, you know, oh my God, it's over. It's not over for me, man. I'm working on the edits right now, so I'm pre-editing right now with the shot list and all that. So I don't feel like I'm away from it yet, but, you know, it's kind of like heroin.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are kind of like on, you know, minor drug abuse, and I'm on my way to a major drug abuse because for the next 6 months or so, you know, 4 months, I'm going to be knee-deep in this still.
They're the recreational users. You're the junkie.
Right. So by the time I'm over it, it's going to feel like, you know, I'm in train spotting where the room is extending, I'm going crazy, and it's over, and things like that. So, but while time still permits me, I'm going to, you know, shoot at some drugs and make fun of you right now and say, haha, it's not over for me yet. I'm still enjoying myself.
enjoying. Oh my God, you said it.
You, Perry.
Yeah.
Why you gotta be like that, man?
It's been, I mean, I think the one thing that I have to feel really sad about is that, you know, for a while it just feels weird getting up and not seeing my cast every
sure.
day. It was the weirdest feeling in the world because I was so used to, you know, for the entire month we've been shooting to get up and somebody's gonna come up and. I mean, before they even got dressed, before they even went to makeup, we'll be talking about the movie. We'll be going up on set. We'll be talking about how the movie's going to play out today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that. And, you know, it affects me really badly in a way that I would still get up and I would still be, you know, thinking about my shot list. And, you know, shot list that I've already finished shooting. And that's you know, it's really tough. It's and it's weird for me because this is the first time I'm feeling this kind of thing. Like on Gene Generation, when it was kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me and Piling were still friends and all that. But for the most part, it's like it was a fun experience. For Necromantia, it was, you know, I was kind of too much into my own world to even bother about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Witchville, it was, you know, very much me producing a product. And, you know, that's about it. But then for Dead Inside, you know, I had the pain of giving birth to two daughters.
No.
And that, you know, that was both a great joy and a pain to leave. But, you know, I don't want to say it's over because, you know, whatever grief that I feel right now, I can put it into my art through my editing.
Sure.
And really do everybody proud for this one. And, you know, what I can promise to everybody is that, you know, I won't stop. I would go in guns blazing for this film, and that's what I would do.
Yeah, baby.
We're all, like, crying and cutting right now.
I was
just like, oh, shit.
We should also mention that there were a bunch of other cast members. There was Shonda and Tara and Jimbo, who were also really phenomenal in their
mm-hmm.
roles.
Mm-hmm.
Shonda played Sarah's. Oh, and Sage, who was Lucy.
Oh dear God, let's not forget about how she made
oh,
you.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh, Sage.
Sage. Oh my goodness.
She was fabulous. No, Sage was Lucy. Shonda was Sarah's mother, and Jimbo was Sarah's father, and Tara was mm-hmm. Billy, and they all. support system for all of us.
Yeah.
It's
to mention Chat Michael Wart, Polly Marger.
And Chad.
And Polly, Queen Bee, of course.
This is like trying to squeeze in the last name before the orchestra starts playing.
Yeah, it is.
Polly's famous lines were "fuck it, whatever, let's just shoot it, let's just do it."
Well, Perry, I know that you have certainly a road ahead of you here, and like you said, you're gonna go in guns blazing for this project. But certainly, Rainey and Lala and Matthew and James. It really has been a pleasure talking to you and having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and
thank you, seriously.
Thank you, Chris.
And of course, I will not speak for Perry, but I count Perry as a friend. He's always, despite his busy schedule, been there for me through my creative endeavors, and it's been wonderful to spend a little time with people that. That Perry thinks so highly of, and Jennifer, I feel that very same way, because it says a lot for someone to pass a pile of papers to Perry and have him believe in it.
Well, Chris, how many times have I actually been on a film where I actually pulled in my cast for this?
Let me think.
Once only. That's Layton.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for that fucker.
I was gonna say.
you're a fag.
Good Lord. Oh my god.
I was gonna say once with Layton, but I'm glad that you took it a step further.
He feels sorry for all of us, is what he's saying.
I think what was really great about it was I was actually I was thinking about this, and while I was thinking about it, Perry, kind of threw it out, and I was like, let's talk about Dead Inside. And he was like, sure. And then before I knew it, I got an email that said, let's have some people on. Let's have, the people that I went through this with on. And I was totally up for it. But no, other than Layton, who was, it was in the depths of a deep. Well, he was, and I really shouldn't even say this, but maybe he won't listen to this. But Perry, he was in the throes of a deep chupacabra depression at the time. I don't know.
It's chupacabra. It's on Blockbuster now. Buy it.
Oh my god. But anyway, this has been a genuine pleasure, and I will, of course, keep the community abreast of all things Dead Inside as they come about, and I look forward to what everyone has coming on the horizon. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for bringing us together. This is fun.
You are very, very welcome, and. This will be lightly edited, put together, and available on the Dead Inside fan page on Facebook tomorrow.
Can you take out the part I said about Layton and post it on the Facebook?
I'll just make it a continuous two-hour loop of that one nine-second.
I'll get some DJs to remix it, too.
There you go. Maybe Comic Christ will do it.
Oh my god, what's this? Is that the Chupacabra thing?
Yeah.
Have you ever had a dream that you could do so?
Oh my god.
I want to stop. Oh my god. That's adorable.
Yeah, in a really fucking creepy kind of way.
Yeah, it is.
All right, everybody. Thank you again. Yeah, thank you, Perry and Rainey and Lala, Matthew, James, Jennifer. Dead Inside. You guys take care, okay?
Yeah.
You too.
Bye.
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 Bye.